The Guardian.
Hi, welcome to Project. I'm Gabrielle Jackson. So this season of Project is concentrating on the Asia Pacific. In the next few months, we'll have new seasons from around the globe. But this time, we're looking at populism. Miles, our producer, joins me again.
Hi, Gabrielle. This is actually, I'm really excited for this episode. It was a really good chat. And it helped me really understand more about this concept of populism.
What's populism? And also, like, don't all politicians want to be popular?
Yeah, well, you think so, because it's a popular word. But actually, what I found is that, you know, politicians often sling around this populist word, like you're being populist or populism, as an insult. Like it's meant to be appealing to the general public, you know, to be popular. But I think it's in more of a, maybe as in a cynical way, in a way to kind of, would you say it divides people maybe?
Yeah, and I think that populist ideas are generally very simple solutions that appeal to a broad range of people without addressing any of the complexity of the issue.
Yeah, you're right. That's what really sets it apart, doesn't it? Like,
so an example I always think of is in Australia, there was a politician who said that all the refugees are causing traffic jams on the highway, and so we had to ban refugees coming to Australia. Of course, refugees don't ban highways, but it's easier for politicians to blame someone else than to address the problems of traffic jams in our highways.
Yeah, okay. That seems like this. I don't know if that populist idea could actually fool anyone.
You'd be surprised, Miles.
But I guess we've seen a few really big prominent examples of populist kind of ideas and campaigns this year.
Trump?
Definitely. The biggest populist figure of the year, probably, and the most surprising victory for everyone.
I am your voice. To all Americans tonight, in all of our cities and in all of our towns, I make this promise. We will make America strong again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again. God bless you and good night. I love you.
But the other big kind of populist movement that made headlines around the world, and something that we seem to have forgotten since Trump's been elected, is Brexit.
Yeah, how can we forget Brexit? Well, Nigel Farage won't let us forget Brexit. He keeps popping up with a stupid grin on his face.
Between Westminster and real communities. And the one image I will remember throughout the rest of my life was a woman in Bolton grabbing my hands with tears in her eyes, saying, why doesn't David Cameron, why doesn't the government come and see what they've done to my community, what they've done to the prospects for my kids? People here don't understand. They're too wealthy. They don't get what open door mass immigration as a result of EU membership has done to people's wages.
Another leader creating a lot of headlines around the world this year is the Philippine President Duterte.
And he does follow that kind of populist way of talking to people. And I think the best example of that is his policy on drugs.
And the extrajudicial killings of alleged drug addicts.
Exactly. So he said things like, people, you know, if my child had a drug addiction, I would kill them. If you see someone with a drug addiction, you should kill them so that their parents won't have to do that.
It's hard to believe that he is still so popular while saying such things.
Because people hate crime, and he's decided that, you know, it's the addict's fault and the dealer's fault, and why let the justice system get in the way? Just, like, take care of it yourself.
I've even seen people on Facebook who are saying, well, we all actually already know who the dealers are, so does it really matter if they are killed? That's a dangerous path to go down, isn't it?
It's a really dangerous path. So at our global meeting, we had a really good chat about all of these issues, but there were some hiccups.
You're going to kill me, but I forgot to push record.
Ah, Jesus, man. I was on a roll.
You were.
Global.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
What? Miles Martignoni. This is like 101 of journalism. Yeah. You forgot to press record. Oh my God, how did you get out of there alive?
And they didn't enjoy that, but they were very gracious. And we started the chat again.
They weren't gracious behind your back, trust me.
Okay, so we were talking about populism, and it was obviously on the back of the Trump victory. And many people pointed out that this was a man who had sort of hoovered up a huge electorate and got himself elected on the back of extraordinary promises, extraordinary rhetoric, you know, grandstanding performances, whatever, really classic stuff. But this was what we really should realize is, and I'm sure most people do, it is not a new phenomenon. He's come late to the party to some extent. He's perhaps the ultimate sort of example of it.
David Monk works out of our Sydney office. He's our international news editor in the Asia Pacific region.
We only have to look back a few decade or so, and we had Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. We can see the results of his populism now in the chaos, I think, which is enveloping that country. Not to say that populism necessarily demands that, but then you can look at Nigel Farage in the UK. You can look at Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines, and I think all of them come from different political parts of the spectrum. However, I think the one thing that sort of binds them all is what I suffer from sometimes. It's like a lack of attention to detail about the particular subject which they are supposed to be absolute experts on, and that is how to run a country. And I don't think they really, there's no real detail in what they offer. They just offer, and that's what people are taking.
This is Oliver Holmes. He's our Southeast Asia correspondent based in Thailand.
I mean, my experience is in the Philippines. I was there during the elections this year. People have drawn parallels between Trump and Duterte because they do exist. And one is that the political establishment and the media in the Philippines, like in the US, were in complete denial about Duterte's popular rise. And in the run-up to the elections, people were saying that he would never come to power. He was just a populist, and that people were just venting their anger. But eventually, they would make what the political establishment said was the right decision. And the morning after the election in the Philippines felt very, very much like the morning after the elections in the United States, because it is similar in the sense that there are political dynasties. In the US, Hillary Clinton was the wife of the former president. And in the Philippines, there are also these very powerful families that have been in charge for a long time. And I think that's where these simplistic ideas, as Dave said, offerings and simple fixes for complex solutions. I think in the Philippines and the US, people were fed up with being told that issues are very complex and that they will be solved on a high level because they weren't seeing them being solved.
Kate Lamb is a journalist based in Jakarta. She's a contributor to The Guardian.
I guess what is most scary is seeing how the populace picks up these simplistic answers for things and really believes them. And what was really shocking to me in the Philippines was talking to people that live in shanty towns across the capital, and you know, they thought that suddenly eradicating the drug problem, which Duterte is trying to do by, you know, this wave of extrajudicial killings that is happening in the country, doing that will solve a whole gamut of other really, really complicated problems, development and education and poverty. So I think there's going to be kind of worrying blowback and consequences in the next few years when that doesn't happen. And I think there's an economic disenfranchisement element to that as well. You know, the people that voted for Trump, the people that voted for Brexit were these discontented kind of blue-collar workers that wanted an answer to their problems. And these kind of sexy taglines spoke to that.
And they did have such good taglines in some of these populist campaigns. How can you beat Make America Great Again?
Well, you can't. He won. You can't beat it.
Yeah, wasn't Hillary going around saying we're already great?
Yeah, that just doesn't work because then you're on the defensive already. Like, here's a person going, this is what we're going to do. And everyone who has felt a bit like their lives haven't been improving, which, as we know, wages haven't grown in the American middle class for 20 years, could hold on to that and go, yeah, let's make America great again. Who cares how?
Yeah, and I think it's similar with Brexit, where there was one that was often repeated called take back control.
Who doesn't want to take back control?
Exactly. Like, there's so much fun. But that's why, like, these taglines, they're so satisfying to get into, but they are simplistic. And often I think they might be there to hide something about the broader issues they're trying to speak about.
The reality of it is, so we've seen so far in the very, very brief pre-presidency of Trump and also the post-Brexit, is that the offers that they were trumpeting crumbled, whether it be the NHS in the UK with the amount of money that was going to be piled into it, the fact that this is going to be a fantastically easy trading relationship between Europe and the UK. I think those things are certainly, one is nonsense, the other one is in severe doubt. And likewise with Trump, where he is evidently rowing back on a number of the pledges that he made. And the fact is, he just made these. I mean, they were like the back of an envelope sort of pledges. And that's the thing that I think is most worrying, because if you look at world leaders, and or people who are trying to be world leaders in various countries, who perhaps have the mechanics to, you know, the levers to enable that, you know, social media, whatever it may, in more developed countries, I think you think if they see this working, if they see the likes of Trump sort of lying and winning, if you see the likes of the Brexit campaign lying and winning and deceiving, then I think, what's to stop them? I mean, why this is a proven model now. You know, you can lie and you can get elected, what's the consequence? Because you have power, and that seems to be the ultimate aim here, is just to achieve power.
In the Philippines, and the interviews that I've seen with people in the States who supported for Duterte in the Philippines and in the States for Trump, I don't think they expect their leaders to carry out all of their promises. They were saying, I would vote for Duterte because it's a kick in the stomach of the establishment, and the same for Trump. You know, I don't believe he's going to build the wall. I don't believe he's going to register Muslims, but it's more to give the political establishment a kick. And so many of his supporters might not be considering that he will carry out any of the things he said he was going to do.
But I think, again, that economic disenfranchisement element comes into it, because I think one of the main reasons they voted for him is because, you know, he's promising them jobs. And if he's unable to deliver on that, I mean, you know, if that's the, you know, that drove them to vote for him, and that doesn't eventuate, that doesn't manifest, then there's going to be kind of Rust Belt resentment that rises up. Like, I think there is a kind of, you know, potential blowback to that. And you know, there will be a tipping point. Maybe that will happen in the Philippines as well, when people start to realize that, you know, there's just so much senseless killing, and other things aren't getting better as well. You know,
But my problem with that is that I'm not sure that's going to happen, because even if he doesn't deliver, let's say Trump in America, I don't think he's actually accountable, or he doesn't see himself as accountable. So when it comes to saying, well, you promised this, but you didn't deliver this, I don't have a job, I'm not better off than I was 4 years ago, whatever it may be, it will be a simple question of, you know, putting out another message, which is like, oh, it's all the Democrats they stalled me, or the country wasn't right, or whatever it may be. And if you've lied before, you'll continue lying again. And so if the proven method is lie and you get elected, well, lie and get re-elected. We're in a sort of like a dreadful situation now, where you can pretty much say anything and get elected, so it seems.
Yeah, Duterte has gone through with one campaign promise, and people in the Philippines do, on the issue of their own personal safety, people are saying, oh, now I'm able to walk around my neighborhood, because there is this, you know, police and vigilante groups killing various different people in the streets, and so a lot of people involved in drugs have gone into hiding. And it might be the same with talking about populists with Trump in the States, because he may push through lots of protectionist measures on US business, and that he might have a few examples of where there are companies that were going to move abroad and they had stayed in. So maybe populism is about just focusing very firmly on one area and just carrying through what you said you were going to do on that. And, you know, even if it has a detrimental effect on the rest of the country, for example, the Philippines could descend into a form of anarchy. It doesn't matter because people will always say, well, you know, carried it through on drugs, or in the states of the US, say, oh, he carried through on his protectionist tariffs.
I don't know, going back to your point, Dave, about the voters, I think voters are perhaps savvier than we give them credit for. Like, I know in Indonesia, during the elections in 2014, which were really, really tight, basically, you know, this upstart guy that was grew up in a slum, became a businessman, and was the first presidential candidate that wasn't from the old elite and didn't have any ties to Suharto, versus, you know, a former military general who had human rights abuses or allegations of on his head. So it was kind of like quite a clear-cut good guy, bad guy race. I mean, they were both kind of campaigning on different strands of populism. There was a lot of vote buying going on the ground. Like, people would come and offer, you know, $50,000, which is about $5, if you voted for this guy. And people thought that it would be effective and that it would sway the vote in Prabowo's favor. But of course, people just took the money and voted for whoever they wanted to, whether that was President Jokowi, or now President Jokowi, or Prabowo. So, you know, I think we do have to, you know, really take the ideas of voters very seriously, and I think people are savvier than perhaps we give them credit for.
I think Kate's right in that voters are savvier than we give them credit for. I don't think every person who voted for Donald Trump believed everything he said, but they wanted to reject the status quo, and that's really powerful. So I think that we have to take that seriously, and the left or progressive people or anyone else for that matter needs to come up with a clear message, because the message coming from Donald Trump and, you know, Nigel Farage and the Brexit vote and Duterte are clear and simple.
They are clear and simple, but they're also very aggressive messages often. And I think it's starting to shift the way that we're debating political issues out in the public.
Yeah, because these people have set the parameters of the debate, and everyone else is on the back foot defending themselves all the time, defending the status quo, which just makes their opponents look like they're winning.
Wasn't Brexit or the referendum campaign? And I was in Australia at the time, so I didn't see every spit and cough of it. But the takeaway I had from it was quite a vicious campaign, in the sense that there was a lot of arguments, stuff that hadn't really happened in a British election for a while. You know, there was like such accusations of lies and sort of all sorts of, you know, so shenanigans going on. And you think to yourself, like, that seemed to me like a marked difference in a political campaign. Yeah. And I don't know, then you look at Trump and you think sort of, without a doubt, it was completely and utterly different. I mean, people will write about this for decades, about sort of his campaign. And if the word isn't populism for his campaign, what is it? I mean, I don't know. Or is it a populist campaign? Does he saying things to people that they want to hear, you know, or right, were too frightened to say themselves, or not frightened, or too, you know, it wasn't really what they said.
I mean, that is the thing. It might be the failure of bipartisan political systems to accommodate people on the far left, on the far right. As certainly in the UK, you know, as the parties have come closer and closer, it isolates a whole group of people who have views that no politician is speaking about.
But then talking about that sort of, it becomes about extremes, doesn't it? Because his language was extreme, his policies were extreme, the reaction at his campaign meets was extreme. And if you're talking about somebody delivering a policy which is very middle of the road, it doesn't hold the hammer blow which you need it to get through to the electorate and say, I've got something, I've got an offering for you which you're going to really like. Whilst he's got the hammer blow, and he's got a number of them, you know, immigration being the biggest ones, you know, radical Islam would have been the other, etc. Whilst Clinton didn't seem to have the hammer blows, it was like sort of the continuity candidate in that sort of sense. But
politicians have always said popular things. I mean, what is different is kind of the blatant use of lies in both Brexit and the American election, and the effectiveness of them, or the lack of care that they're lies.
But I like your point, Oliver, is like, just because they won, does that mean they're populist? And if let's say Brexit had gone the other way, would it have been a populist campaign that Cameron had run in order to sort of like keep Britain in the European Union and for the best interests of the country, etc., etc.? Would it be seen if it was like, let's say it was a 60-40 split instead of a 52-48 pro-Brexit, would it then be now be seen as like this populist sort of like movement to sort of like keep Britain? Obviously it wasn't, but would we be talking about it in those terms, you know, given that campaign?
Does it seem like we're getting more polarized, like political moderates on, you know,
well, moderates,
what happened there?
But I mean, a moderate politician now seems like very weak and almost ineffective. You know, the voice feels as if, you know, when you have a reasonable sort of proposition, it now feels as if it, you know, it should come sort of, you know, lathered with bile and sort of and fury, you know, in order to have any effect. Yet the proposition is sane, and it's let's more jobs for workers, or sort of like let's try and sort of limit climate change, or what it may be, you know. But now it seems that you can't you have to shout in order to be heard. So it seems. And maybe that's the effect of what the Trump Brexit sort of thing has done.
Next time on Project, we look at global forced migrations. Why are so many countries stopping refugees from entering? How could others benefit by letting them in?
Certainly, we are at a critical point in history, certainly in modern history, in terms of the number of people who are displaced. We're looking at more than 60 million people, which is, you know, the highest number since World War II. The burden, I suppose, for hosting those people is falling in a very inequitable way across the world on developing countries and developing economies. And we're seeing, a more isolationist policy from a lot of countries, nativist populist arguments against migration. And that's causing enormous problems.
Thanks for listening to Project. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And while you're there, don't forget to leave us a review. Miles Martignoni executive produced and mixed this episode of Project. Martin Peralta produced the show and provided some original music. You can find more information at theguardian.com.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.